Welcome to Unlock Your Child's Full Potential podcast, where we explore practical insights to nurture the best in our children. I'm your host, Billy, and today we're diving into ways to support our anxious kids with Anastasia Arouz. As a licensed mental health counselor, registered play therapist, and former middle school teacher, Anastasia brings loads of know-how to the table. In this episode, we'll chat about spotting anxiety in kids and how to help them through it. Anastasia will share tips for creating a calm home environment and why it's vital to understand and acknowledge our kids' feelings. But wait, there's more. We'll address a big question. How do we build our kids' confidence while making sure they feel good about themselves intrinsically? Anastasia will share her thoughts on middle schoolers' struggles and how we can support them through these challenging times. And don't miss her take on family play therapy. Join us as we learn how to support our anxious kids and make parenting a little easier. Also, I highly recommend checking out another eye-opening episode with Eric Daddario, a youth mental health speaker, on navigating your child through adversity. It's episode 40, and I'll leave the link in the show notes for you. Now, let's welcome Anastasia. Hi, Anastasia. I'm genuinely thrilled about our interview topic today, delving into strategies for supporting our anxious kids and nurturing their mental well-being. With your background as a licensed mental health counselor, a registered play therapist, and former middle school teacher, I feel like you bring a unique blend of expertise to the table. I can't wait for you to guide us through this conversation.
Yes, of course. I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
For the purpose of this discussion, let's define what we are referring to when we say anxious kids. Like, what are the signs or behaviors that might signal anxiety in our little ones?
It can come out so many different ways. It can come out as anger. It can come out as hyperactivity. It can come out as sadness. It's whenever your child gets into the fight flight response in their brain and they aren't able to process the way you would want them to or what you would expect from them. And their reactions to things is different than what is typical for your child.
Okay. And how can we help them navigate that anxiety once it arises? Because all kids show these signs from time to time, some more than others. What is our best approach?
All of them do. Like all of us, even as adults, we all have anxiety at times over things. So I think a lot of times, depending on the age of the child, really teaching them what anxiety is and like, going over a definition of what anxiety is, what it does to your body, what can happen when you're anxious. A lot of times once they know that there's nothing like wrong with them and that they're just experiencing this feeling that will affect them, that will help. So I think a lot of times just like educating them and explaining what anxiety is can be very, very helpful.
So do we do that in the moment? Or we deal with the behavior right there? We co-regulate and then we explain?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So definitely get that. You can't talk about it when they're in that fight flight. So definitely once they have calmed down and even doing it, not even in that day, doing it a different day. If you have a child that's anxious a lot, doing it at a time when they're totally calm and just talking about how you know they struggle with it and that you thought you would just let them know why that's happening.
We all have those moments when we unknowingly make things a bit more stressful for our kids. Do you have any tips on how to create a calm environment at home so we are supportive of our anxious kids instead of being even more stressful for them?
I think one thing is to definitely try to validate how they're feeling. That's a big one, is letting them know it's okay to be anxious. It's okay that they're feeling that way. So I think that's one thing, is to like validate the feeling. And then if you're modeling it, if you're modeling calmness, if you're modeling that way of just like being present and being regulated, that helps too. And they might not be able to get there, but a lot of times just children mimic how you're behaving. And so if you can be calm in the moment, that will help them. When I was teaching, I would train teachers at times and explaining to teachers that how you respond to the child is typically how they're going to respond to you. No.
It's a big responsibility.
It is such a big one. Yeah, it is.
There are maybe situations when we unknowingly make their anxiety even worse. Can you give us some examples of that?
I think it can get worse if you're anxious. It also can get worse if you're allowing them to be exposed to things that can create anxiety. So if you have little ones and they're able to watch anything on TV, that they want to watch, and they're seeing things on TV that are really scary that aren't developmentally appropriate, that will cause them to be anxious. And you might not even realize it at the time. They might not realize it at the time, but it's going to come out later on, maybe when they try to go to sleep or whenever you're dropping them off somewhere or something. And then they'll talk to you about it. But I would definitely watch what they're watching on TV, paying attention. Video games, that also contributes to anxiety. So really monitoring the amount of time your kids are playing, how long they're playing, and what they're playing.
Mm-hmm. And I think our listeners have a little older kids, like 5 and older. And for tweens, almost everyone has a phone right now. Yeah. So even social media apps could be really triggering in that regard, like making them even more anxious.
Yeah,
maybe being careful with that as well.
I agree.
What about when our kids are feeling like they're not measuring up? They have thoughts like, I'm incapable, I'm not good enough. And our first response might be coming to the rescue. That's not helpful, right? How do we properly help them navigate those moments?
I think especially just like encouraging that open communication where they feel like they can talk to you. So creating that safe space, supportive environment, helping them feel comfortable and expressing themselves, and then listening to them and being empathetic without judging them and letting them know that you're there and that it's okay. It's okay to not get whatever it was, and to provide that reassurance that you're going to support them and remind them of their strengths and the things that they're good at and their past successes, things like that.
Okay, so it's not just brushing it off. Oh, you can do it. Come on, you can do it. It's more like, again, acknowledging their struggle at the moment.
Yes, definitely. Acknowledging is so important. I talk to parents a lot about, a lot of times your kids will be like, I'm so scared or I'm so sad. And you brush it off and not think about or think it's silly that they're feeling that way. But just acknowledging and even reflecting back, like, I see you're really scared right now. I see you're really having a hard time. Just letting them know that you're paying attention to how they feel does so much.
Yeah, I think so too. As a perfect complement to today's discussion, I offer you the Connection Blueprint, 5 simple and effective tools to strengthen the bond with your child. If you're seeking inspiration on creating the warm and loving home environment that Anastasia and I just discussed, ensuring your kids feel truly seen, heard, and loved, look no further. Access the link in the show notes and claim your free copy of the Connection Blueprint.
I've been diving into Jamie Kern Lima's book, Worthy, lately. And it got me thinking about the distinction between self-worth and confidence. And she emphasizes how self-confidence is more linked to external achievements, where self-worth is more about recognizing our inherent value for being ourselves. And it seems like a game changer for parenting. Many of us focus on boosting our kids' confidence. But do you think that the tendency for self-esteem to take a backseat? How do we strike the balance and ensure we're nurturing both of them and not focusing on achievements?
That's so hard because we want our kids to be successful. We want them to do well. I think a lot of the times it's letting the child lead, right? Letting them lead in what they like to do, what makes them feel good, not what you feel good, what makes them feel good. Because like you're talking about that self-worth, that's how they feel intrinsically. And so you're going to want to promote those things that they enjoy and that they like to do. And if you notice it's not, they're in an activity or they're in a sport that they're not enjoying, pushing them, forcing them, it's not going to help their self-worth because it's not something that's intrinsic within what they want to do. And that's not being said they can quit in the middle of like a season or whatever, but not forcing them year after year after year to play something just because that's something you would want them to do and be successful at.
That's a great point. So giving them chances to show where they can shine and just following their lead. Okay, we've all been through the middle school phase. And let's be honest, some of those memories are probably buried deep. And I admit it can be tricky to fully grasp what our kids are going through. And as a middle school teacher, you have a lot of experience with that. Can you shed some light on the unique challenges faced by middle schoolers today? So we can, as parents, better understand and support them.
Middle school is a hard time because you're not a little kid anymore. You're not a big kid. You're not a teenager yet. I mean, once you get to 7th, I guess you can 8th. That's like the beginning, but you're in a weird phase. Your body is changing, your brain is changing, and you're not really comfortable yet in who you are as a child or who you're going to be as an adult. And so it's a really tough time physically, emotionally, all of it. And so anxiety comes up a lot in those times for kids because they're so unsure of who they are. And so as parents, to be there as a guide for them and to be there as just what you're saying, to help them with their self-worth and be there as a way to pay attention to whenever they don't do well, whenever they succeed, but not imposing what you want, letting them lead again, but also just being there, because being in middle school is a very, very tough time. It's really hard for kids because that's like figuring out who you're going to be and you're leaving that child part behind.
Yeah. And at the same time, they're pushing back on us. Like they don't want to spend so much time with us. They focus on their friends, yet it's the time they most need us, right?
Yeah. And it's hard for us as parents because, yeah, you still want them to be that little cuddly child. It might not look like they don't want you, but they do. It just looks like a different way. And so just being aware of that, that they're growing and changing and that you can be there for them, but in the moments that they want and being around and paying attention to what they're doing, even if they're not asking, just making sure you're always paying attention, knowing who their friends are, knowing what they're interested in. And when they do ask, you'll know how to respond because you've been paying attention the whole time.
Yeah, I love that. You have a conversation starter because you know what's happening right now in their life. I recently had a talk with another parenting expert that told me one-on-one bonding times are so important. And I was thinking you have to be ready for the kid when they need you, when they want to talk to you. But she told me that it could be just 10 minutes of your day whenever you can. Set the parameters and tell them now you have 10 minutes undivided attention on my part. Let me know what's happening with you. And I tried it those last few days and it really worked very well for them because I have three girls and most of the time they're talking over each other, wanting my attention, and I cannot be fully present with everyone at the same time. And I was thinking they wouldn't go for a structured time like this, but it really helped, at least for now.
Oh, that's so cool. So yeah, that's awesome. Did you tell them ahead of time? Like, I'm going to do this with you. You let them know ahead of time?
Yeah, I let them know ahead of time and they weren't excited about it. But once we did it, they felt really great. And I have one of those shy and quiet girls that doesn't talk much. And during these 10 minutes, wow.
Oh,
she talked
so cool.
The full 10 minutes. Yeah, I find it very cool.
That's a great strategy. I love that, especially if you have multiple kids all that are at a certain age level. That would be great.
Would you like to tell us a bit about family play therapy?
Sure. Yeah. So I have been a play therapist now, probably like 20 years. I mean, a long time. And so play therapy is a great way for kids to be able to express themselves without using words, right? So at home, if you're playing with your child, letting them play, letting them lead the play without asking them a ton of questions, joining them in play and letting them lead, letting them be the ones that are guiding you through the play without words necessarily. You can talk about the play, but not asking the questions, letting the kids just make up the story or tell you the person's name or tell you what the character is doing. In family play therapy, you can do that a lot in the home. But then if you have a child that needs like professional play therapy, the play therapist will do a lot of those types of non-directive play in their office. Another way you can do play therapy is directive play, which would be playing games or drawing or just the typical stuff that we know as parents and as professionals that would be just like normal things that we would do with kids, games or outside play, things like that. But the non-directive play, I think, is really special because it is a way for a child to really express themselves without feeling pressure or without feeling the need to say what they think you want them to say.
And is that suitable for young kids only?
It kind of depends. So you can do that with children pretty much from the time they start talking. When they become 3 to about 8 is the best time to use the non-directive. But I've done it with kids that are older. Sometimes as kids get between that 9 to 11 age, they'll kind of go in and out of play. And you'll notice with children in that age, they don't play with toys as much. Every once in a while, you'll get them to play with something and they'll go in and out of that little kid play to like not anymore. So it's harder as they get older with the non-directive. So that's where you can bring in the directive play of like playing a game with them or building Legos or things like that, where you're still with them and you're not asking a ton of questions. You're just playing more of a directive game, more structured.
And what's our objective here? To learn more about their inner world or teach or what's...
It depends. Like, it depends what it would be. So in an office setting, it would be whatever the issue is. Your objective is to build connections. And so to build connections with your child at home, build that time of where you're bonding with, just the time for you guys to connect with each other and have a place of just that play. There's no TV, there's no like electronics or video games, just a time of connecting through whatever game or activity that you're doing. Sometimes it can help you if you're trying to figure out something that's happening at school. Or trying to find out more about like a situation, definitely do some play. Because as the kids are sitting there and you're just playing, hopefully they'll start talking about something that's going on. And you've probably noticed at times when your kids are going to bed, they'll think of something they want to tell you. It's kind of the same thing. It's more just during the time of the play where you can get things, some things out of them to talk about.
You mentioned that kids, when they get older, then they don't play with toys that much. I find that the three girls play games with each other, not with the toys. And I find that fascinating that they haven't lost that yet.
No, I love when they do that as they get older. It's fun to see them do the pretend play. That's like one of my favorite things to do is watch the kids. And it makes me sad when it leaves. But yeah, it's cool to watch that. I agree.
I've got this little tradition where I love picking up book recommendations from my guests. Is there any book that rocked your world and you think would be a game changer for parents? And it doesn't have to be a strictly parenting book.
I read books all the time. So you said you were reading The Worth It. Is that what it's called? Worth It?
Yeah, but... Worthy. Yeah, it's brand new.
Yeah, I've seen it. Well, one of my favorite things that we're doing right now, I'll tell you a couple things, is that I love Audible. One of the things that I'm doing with Carpool now is that instead of listening to like the radio or just randomness, my son and I are listening to Harry Potter on the way to school and on the way home, and he is loving it. So that's one thing that we've enjoyed a lot. I never read the books until now, so I've loved Harry Potter. That has been such a great book. And then another really good book that I like, was going to tell you for parents. It's called What Happened to You. And so it's written by Oprah Winfrey and a guy named Bruce Perry. It's a book about trauma. So a lot of times we'll say like have internal talk, like what is wrong with me? Why would I do that? So that whole book is about how there's nothing wrong with you. It's like what happened to you is why you would act a certain way or why you do the things you do or why your partner does the things they do. And Bruce Perry has done a lot on behaviors. He's a psychologist. And so he's done a lot on the brain and behaviors and why people act a certain way. And so he partnered with Oprah, which I think is so cool. And so she, in the Audible version, at least, she'll have like excerpts from her show, and then they'll break it down and talk about like why these people were doing or talking about whatever it was. And it's not what was wrong with them. It's like what happened to them. That's one of my most favorite books that I give parents, tell them to read, because you give yourself a sense of like a break of like not being so much pressure on yourself. Cause it's like, there's nothing wrong with you. It's like, you've had all of these hot things happen in your life. They've created the person that you are. So it's a great book to give yourself grace and to give the people around you grace.
I love that recommendation. Thank you. And here's a fun one. If you could share just one nugget of parenting wisdom with moms everywhere, what would that be? Like, you know, the golden piece of advice you wish someone had whispered in your ear before you went into the world of motherhood.
Oh my gosh. I think just being present with your kids and enjoying each moment. One, because it goes super fast. And two, because they need it. And I think we're in such a distracted world right now that we're all so busy. We get distracted on our phones. We get distracted with the internet. We get distracted on our computers. And so just really being present and being with your children and just being in that moment with them.
Learning to really listen and not wait for your turn to talk.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anastasia, do you have anything else you would like to share with us today and we didn't have the chance to touch upon?
I think the only other thing I would say is that if you have a child that is really, really anxious and that you've done all of the things Seeking professional help might be a great idea. Talking to your pediatrician, finding a therapist, talking to a coach, something that will help you get more answers. Don't just let it fester because it will just get worse. If you notice your child has anxiety issues when they're little and you've done stuff, don't let it just keep building. Just try to find help for them. And there's lots of ways and resources to do that. And there's nothing wrong with it. So I think that would be the one thing that I would like to say to parents.
Yeah, great point. Thank you. Would you like to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, of course. So you can find me on Instagram at Anastasia of Ruse. And I have all kinds of parenting and family information. I have a coaching program that I do with parents that can be one session to 12 sessions. And then you can also find me on my website, which is AnastasiaArusCoaching.com, which tells all about me and everything that I've done and how I can help you.
Thank you so much for this conversation. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking with you, and I hope it helps a lot of families.
I'm sure it will. Thank you for tuning in. For further insights into nurturing our children's mental well-being, don't miss episode 40, where Eric Dedario shares his top strategy for parents. Find the link in the show notes, and I'll see you next Wednesday.